I am Platt on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The American playwright and poet Dan O'Brien joins me now. He recently published a collection of poems entitled War Reporter. It is described as a book-length sequence of poems, and they are derived from the conversations and correspondence Mr. O'Brien had with Paul Watson, who received the Pulitzer Prize for Photography in 1993. The image of a dead American being dragged through the streets of Mogadishu was captured by Watson. In the pieces in this book, you see the understanding O'Brien seeks from Watson, the wisdom they learn together, and the tragic, horrific, and traumatic damage people suffer because of war. It's an interesting collaboration had by the Messrs. O'Brien and Watson, and I'll ask Dan how that came about, and what was happening in his own life that inspired his reaching out to Watson. We'll also discuss the poems that appear in this book, as well as the play, The Body of an American, which is about Paul Watson, and which received the Edward M. Kennedy Prize for Drama. The opera that Watson also inspired that recently premiered at Stanford as well. The book is published in North America by Hanging Loose Press and CB Editions in Britain. The website for more is at danobrien.org. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program in Los Angeles of this day, Dan O'Brien. Mr. O'Brien, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
It's good to be with you.
So do you remember where you were or when it was that you saw that photograph that Paul Watson took of the American being dragged through the streets of Mogadishu?
You know, I don't remember the precise time and place. That's kind of part of what drew me to Paul and the picture in the first place, because I was kind of haunted by the picture. I certainly knew of the picture when I saw it again after hearing an interview in 2007 with Paul Watson. I, you know, went online and Googled it and looked at the image again. And, of course, the actual image was kind of burned into my brain, but I didn't have a precise sense of where it was. Part of that is my age. You know, I think I was a freshman in college and probably had other things on my mind than geopolitical conflict and trauma. But there was a kind of haunting quality to the picture for that reason, but I couldn't quite place it, but I felt like it had been sort of kicking around my unconscious mind for a while. And the hope was maybe, you know, other people in our culture would have a similar response to the picture, that enough time had passed that suddenly, I mean, this is, you know, October is 20 years since that picture was taken. The Battle of Mogadishu was, you know, the first week of October there. And, you know, partly I was shocked to see how much time had passed. You know, suddenly it was a piece of history or recent history. And at the same time, it reminded me so much of what was going on in current events in 2007 and even right now. So there's something kind of potentially haunting about that photograph that drew me to it, or back to it.
Yeah. So you mentioned 2007, an interview that you heard Watson give, and that would have been around the time that he published his book, right?
Exactly. It was on Fresh Air on National Public Radio, and his memoir had just been published. I think the Canadian edition had just been published, and then a few months later, the U.S. edition followed.
So he must have said something in that interview that struck you, that obviously inspired you to reach out to him. There must have been something happening in your life that was seeking clarification, perhaps, that prompted all of this.
Yeah, in the most general sense, I think it was how haunted he seemed in this interview. Specifically by that picture, you know, he believes that when he took that photograph, he heard the voice of the dead soldier speak to him and say, if you do this, if you take this picture, I will own you forever. So in the most sort of practical sense, it was that story that hooked me. I think in general, there was just something about his voice, about his psychology, about that feeling he had and has still, a feeling haunted, feeling that he'll be punished for that photograph, and maybe in a larger sense, you know, punished for all the trauma he's either witnessed or escaped from. You know, I think a lot of it is probably just survivor's guilt, you know, and so there was just even the quality of his voice in the interview was familiar to me. It's what you were just saying. It's something I identified with. I didn't quite understand, and I don't know if I do entirely understand the degree of identification I felt with him.
You'd never been to war or anything like that, right?
No. Yeah. I've never written, plays and or poetry that could possibly be construed as political or about these subjects. I mean, I've written things that were often about psychological trauma, but of a much more, I guess, domestic and then certainly not political or military nature. So yeah, it was a very new development for me. I think, but again, part of what was so moving and haunting about Paul to me was this feeling of the uncanny. This simultaneous feeling that there's something very familiar about him and what he was going through, and then there were differences, vast differences. We're both writers. I think of him as a very artistic writer in terms of his journalism, and yet, he spent the last 25 years pursuing the most traumatic conflict zones around the world. Whereas, I tend to be probably an overly psychological writer. I've previously written lots of history plays where I've sort of comfortably found my stories in books and in libraries and. We're vastly different. Also, just the way in which journalists and war reporters specifically reminded me of artists.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that sense of the uncanny. I think a lot of artists are very different from war reporters in terms of how much we physically risk ourselves and how much maybe we engage, with life as opposed to with our own fantasies or whatever. But at the same time, we do risk a lot. We risk a lot out of probably some kind of deep psychological need or trauma in ways that aren't always so admirable, And that's part of Paul's attraction, my attraction to Paul's work, is that he's very honest about, his motivations, the sort of addiction to adrenaline and how he began, his career, like many younger war reporters, probably just acting out a certain amount of psychological need that he didn't fully understand. All of that sounded to me like what I do, even though, like I said, in other ways, I'm vastly different from Paul.
So the play, that came before this collection of poems, is that right?
It did. I mean, there's a lot of overlap, but the play started first. I mean, I've written poetry for a long time, but I'd really been focusing on playwriting for, about 10, 15 years of being a young and emerging and now, I guess, mid-career playwright. So it did start as a play, and it kind of just moved into or expanded into poetry and simultaneously into the opera as well. The whole thing, I've referred to it as the sort of an ongoing project with Paul as opposed to one individual work, because it does feel like, something that kind of overspills the boundaries of different genres for me. And that's partly why it's exciting
as
well. It doesn't, go ahead.
And is it a collaboration between the two of you?
It's not in the sense that he doesn't ever give me editorial feedback on what I'm writing. It's a collaboration in the sense that he's always giving me, as of last night, sending me transcripts or video recordings or audio recordings of the stories he's working on, or simply just corresponding with me, because so many of the poems and a lot of the play and the opera are derived from the emails he's written to me. So in that sense, it's a collaboration, but he really just kind of offloads the material to me and then just sort of lets me do whatever I want with it, which, is interesting. He's read some of the poems. He still hasn't seen the play, actually. The play premiered in Portland last year and is going to be in London this winter. I'm going to try to get him to come from Vancouver or wherever he is to London to see it. But there's an interesting, again, it's a contradiction in a way, because he shares so much of his material with me so selflessly, and at the same time wants to keep the material at an arm's length, probably either because he's too busy, but also because so much of the material is so psychologically difficult for him to revisit.
Well, what do you think it is about yourself that allows him to share so much of himself to you? I mean, there must be something that attracts him to you and to talk to you as he has over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a sense of what that might be?
I do. I mean, I think on one level, probably when I first got in touch with him, it was simply, you know, he had the book coming out, and as a writer myself, it's great to have somebody paying attention and excited by what your by your story, you know. And I think that's part of it. I think he tends to, he might disagree with this, but I think he tends to collect pen pals like me, you know, people who have a very personal response to his work and a personal response to his stories, to the vulnerability he displays. Because, you know, unlike a fair number of war reporters, he reveals a lot of his own shortcomings and his own wounds. You know, he doesn't really work too hard to keep this facade of the macho war reporter. So I think he attracts people like me who are moved by that, identify with that type of trauma. You know, I think some people probably, he said recently that, you know, he ignores most of the emails he gets from strangers, which is smart, probably as a journalist, but often because people share too much with him. And maybe in the beginning, you know, it was just sort of a bit of a courtship in the sense that, you know, I told him I was moved by his work, and then I wanted to write about him. I think that was part of it, too. So from the very beginning, I did say that I was hoping there was some kind of writing project in getting to know each other. And so he must have just been interested in that. I don't really know. It's a really interesting question. I've spent so much time thinking about what is it about him that I find intriguing, and I'm not quite sure why he puts up with me. I mean, I think on some level he must understand that we have a lot in common emotionally or psychologically, and that part of that has just come from me telling him that and revealing things about my background. And since then, we've seen each other, you know, many times in person. So, you know, we've developed something of a friendship that goes beyond just the writing collaboration.
And so you have had some trauma in your life, and you write in the book. You reveal some of that in some of the poems, and how you reaching out to Paul Watson was sort of an answer, or you sought help, not help, but you sought sort of some comfort through his work. Has the pain or the trauma in your life, has that subsided having gotten to know Watson as you have?
Yeah, it has. It certainly has. I mean, it was, you know, I think it's an ongoing. My trauma is fairly mundane, or, you know, it's a trauma that I hope a lot of people can identify with. And that's why it's in the play, and it's to some degree in some of the poems as a kind of subplot or minor theme in the work. To help the reader or the audience sort of say, okay, here's a character that I'm calling Dan O'Brien, you know, who's come from a very dysfunctional family. But again, there are much more dysfunctional families. I mean, mine was a childhood of, you know, parents with fairly significant mental disorders. And by extension, some of my siblings, I'm one of six, and it was a very emotionally and psychologically abusive household. Full of secrets. I mean, one other element of identification with Paul that I feel very strongly, but it might be sort of a romantic notion, but this, you know, Paul feels like he's constantly trying to find the truth. He's constantly trying to use his camera and his stories to pull, you know, secrets out of the shadows, you know, secrets of conflicts that people aren't paying attention to, or trying to reveal how these conflicts are coming about. Even the simple fact that, you know, Paul feels like he's constantly fighting against a very human instinct to turn away and not look at trauma and violence and then some of the horrible things that humans do to each other. You know, and because of my childhood, which involved a lot of secrecy about my parents' lives and about their own families, you know, my work, even before I met Paul, was always very much about trying to give voice to taboos and to just to tell the truth, often about things that people, including myself, don't always want to take a look at head on.
He tells you in one of the poems to ask questions, because that's what he would do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's inspiring to me. I mean, that's the way, he's very self-deprecating about journalism. You know, he'll say, because we've been talking about a new project, something that we would maybe write together more creatively, that might potentially be about journalists. And, you know, he's very self-deprecating about that and says, who cares about journalists? I wouldn't want to watch that on, you know, the stage or on TV or on screen. And, but from my point of view, you know, there's something incredibly admirable about writers who, you know, aren't necessarily sitting around just creating stories with shadow puppets in their fantasy life. They're actually engaged with life, trying to connect to people. You know, the other way in which he's inspiring is that I started writing as a kid, you know, as many people do, as an escape, you know, from that same family dysfunction I was talking about, you know, mm-hmm. sort of, in many ways, an escape from reality. It was a different reality I was creating that could then, you know, lead to other good things in my life, but it was an escape from, often from connection to people. And part of the change that started to happen when I started working with Paul was, you know, really turning the corner on trying to use my writing to connect to people first, and the writing would kind of be secondary, you know, the actual product. The connecting to people whose stories I cared about, who are alive right now that I can actually have a relationship with, just became much more exciting to me.
Did you think after having written a play, now a collection of poems, and the opera, and then you mentioned thinking of collaborating with him again, that in some way he sort of owns you forever?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that's a great way to put it. I feel like there's, the way in which Paul has been changed and owned by his experience in a very watered down way, I feel I've also been changed or owned by his experience. And even, you know, the opening poem of the book is about taking that picture and hearing that voice. And the poem ends with, you know, Paul asking the cadaver, "You poor man, who are you?" But on some level, I think it's about how now Paul doesn't quite know who he is at that moment because he's been changed by that picture. And I think in a much, you know, more minor way, because I wasn't there and I didn't suffer that degree of trauma, of course, and it's a similar change. I even think, you know, it's been difficult after working with Paul and with his material for going on 6 years now. It's hard for me to imagine writing about, you know, I've sort of jokingly said to friends, I can't write about sunsets and blue jays and dead grandmothers anymore, because you know, I've sort of acclimatized to the degree of danger, the degree of trauma in Paul's work. Now, I'm still doing it from the comfort of my desk in Los Angeles or wherever, so it's kind of silly to compare it, but it is there's a bit of the sort of adrenaline junkie, feeling that I've gotten from working with Paul's work that I've, even though I've been writing other projects that aren't related to Paul, I've been seeking out stories that have a similar level of stakes.
The other thing that one gets when reading this collection of poems, War Reporter, is the idea of what it's like to cover a war, and you sort of bring the conflict, or covering the conflict, to the reader. How much of, was this all from Paul Watson, or, I mean, you didn't go over there and cover any wars yourself, right?
No, I never have.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's all through Paul. Yeah, it's certainly, and through Paul, I guess, getting to know the work of other journalists that I didn't know of before. But it's still, you know, it was so, when I started the project, it was so overwhelming, the world that he's covered for so long, as well as the world of being a combat journalist, that the only way I could really start to understand it was to try to, you know, get as close as I could to his perspective on these stories and his consciousness, his memories. So whatever comes through, you know, about the life and the lifestyle of a war reporter is really very much from him. And he would say that he said that he'd be scared to, you know, have peers of his see the play or read the poems because they might think that his point of view is total BS, you know, so it certainly is very subjectively his experience of the lifestyle.
There's a poem in the book that got me onto the computer and started Googling, It was about she was an actress, or she'd been nominated for a Tony, and then she decides to go into the line of work that Paul Watson's in, and that's photojournalism.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to see her later on, because I guess after she has post-traumatic stress disorder and other illnesses,
right.
And is essentially broken. And it's just, it's
right.
Quite powerful. What's the name of the woman? I'm trying to find the poem in the book.
Her name is, her name is Jana Schneider, J-A-N-A Schneider. And she, it's a very moving story. I mean, again, I didn't know anything about her, and he mentioned her, and he wrote about her a little bit in the book, and the poem is, you know, kind of a mix of what he's written about her and what he and I talked about and some of the research I've done. And, part of what's fascinating to me about her is she's certainly an example of one type of combat journalist who is drawn to the work because they're you know, she was most likely and still is suffers extreme bipolar disorder, and which reminds me of lots of artists, of course, that I know too. And she's a very intense woman and personality. She was she was a Tony nominee for The Mystery of Edwin Drood in I think 86. And then in her 30s, she sort of decided or felt that there weren't any roles, you know, left for, women her age, which I think is kind of horrible. And she decided, without any background or training, she wanted to be a war photographer. And, you know, Paul had some time with her in different countries and had, sort of a history with her. And it is a fairly tragic story in the sense that years later, I think it was in the early 2000s, she was picked up homeless on the streets of New York, brought to Bellevue and kept there for a certain amount of time and diagnosed with psychosis brought on probably by extreme bipolar disorder. And as far as I know now, she's back home living with her mother, which is where in Wisconsin, which is where Paul went to visit her probably in 2006 or so when he was researching his memoir. You know, part of the memoir is interesting because of the PTSD and because he's a journalist. Because of the PTSD, he's very suspicious of his memories being too fragmented or not,
yeah.
Clear enough. And because he's a journalist, when he wrote the book, he wanted to make sure he wasn't, misremembering facts. So he did a lot of journalistic research for the book to make sure his stories were straight, and he did go to see her. It's a very, it's a very moving story, and in some ways she's an example of perhaps what could have happened to Paul, or, maybe still could happen to Paul in terms of, the cost of this life, she claims, she'd been kidnapped and tortured and raped several times in different places. I mean, she certainly lived through a lot of trauma, which may or may not have, of course, led to the breakdown. That's one of the mysteries for me about combat journalists and maybe artists, too, is that you have to have a certain amount of dysfunction probably to be compelled to do this sort of thing. And at the same time, perhaps, the lifestyle sometimes can help you transcend those limitations, I think, and it can also perhaps make things worse,
Well, what do you think say about Paul Watson, his life, his experiences in poetry or through poetry that you couldn't say if you wrote an article about him or an essay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a awfully creative process in the sense that the poems look a certain way. They look like poems. The line breaks are different than, say, paragraphs. But there is something different that you evoke in your writing and in these poems in this book. What is that?
When I read his memoir, I was very conscious of how it was the book of a journalist. It was very exciting, but very clear and very clear outward gaze, from the point of view of the memoirist, of Paul Watson. So I think it's a great book, but I felt with my, taste and my psychology, I wanted to sort of understand the inward life of someone like Paul, or the inner life. I wanted to, I wanted to experience on a much more subjective level the type of life that, that Paul's led. And that's what I thought I could bring to the collaboration. You know, like I said before, I felt like a lot of my writing previously and just in general was prone to probably too much introspection. And I thought maybe the tension between his extrospection or whatever the word is, and my introspection might create something unique, you know. So the book, I thought, his book, is tremendously successful, but it did leave me with this sort of hunger to know him on a deeper level. And I think all of that is, you know, just a way for me to get back to what I was working through emotionally at the time. That to write about myself so pointedly would have been too difficult or too upsetting or too boring, you know. So having Paul as a, and this is where my playwriting background comes into it, having Paul as a, almost as a role for me to play was tremendously, not only therapeutic, but I think gave me much more perspective on my own writing. But I could wear that mask of this character, of Paul Watson, but still, you know, channel and deal with some of the same emotional issues.
Am I correct to assume that you wrote the poems before you wrote the titles?
Not always, but yeah, I think it kind of, you know, I'm still writing. I've got a new manuscript, a poetry in progress about Paul and about his recent trips to Syria. And so, you know, I'm still writing poems about him. And, you know, some of them, the titles do follow from working on all the general sense of what the title is, and the poem will sort of reveal to me what the title should be. And sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes it certainly was, I just had the sense that this is the war report of Paul Watson on God, for example, because he said something at some point that felt very pithy and resonant for me on that subject. So it kind of has gone both ways.
Well, and in terms of ordering the poems in this book, I mean, do you think about that a lot?
I do, and in the, you know, the poems, the structure benefited, I think, to whatever degree it works, on the structure of the play. The play is a very non-traditional play. It moves around in time and space in lots of ways, but it, you know, it does follow, I guess, the emotional arc of the collection. You know, the biggest difference is that the collection of poetry deals with a lot of episodic, events from Paul's life that the play can't really go into, because the play has to be so much more structured in terms of its dramatic action. But in terms of that sort of that journey from that photograph, I mean, both of them, both the book and the play and the opera, they're all meant to, you know, deal with that question of a haunting. You know, so they all begin with that photograph that he took that he won the Pulitzer for, where he heard the voice. And then, you know, move through the present as he tries to sort of deal with that haunting and perhaps heal it or solve the haunting or maybe comes to accept that he can't completely erase it and that's okay. And, you know, maybe it's a journey towards a greater sense of responsibility or greater maturity. And then along the way, there are certain sort of dips back in time while he's trying to process the haunting right now, dealing with sort of his life beforehand and how it's affecting what he's going through right now. So it has, you know, it's not, the book is, some people have said the book, the poetry kind of reads almost like a novel or something, and that it's, you know, it's got that kind of heft to it. It's very long for a poetry collection. It's, you know, it's not, it's narrative poetry for the most part, you know, it tells a story or it's close to a dramatic monologue. But it does, both the play and the opera and the poems really try to follow that arc of, you know, can you solve a haunting? Can you heal a haunting? And I think you can. I think it does change. I think by the end of the collection, and Paul and I were just discussing this recently, you know, I think there is a change. You know, Paul is certainly sometimes quite often feeling cursed or like he's going to be punished still for that photograph, or that he still lives specifically with that ghost. And at the same time, I do think that trauma in anyone's life, you start to, you learn how to live with it, and you learn how to some degree, make friends with the ghost, or And even, you know, I said to Paul, I said, you know, how do we know for sure that that voice said, it's what's in the play, and it's also in the book of poetry where the brother of the soldier that Paul took that picture of while speaking to Paul said, you know, how do you know that that voice meant something bad or something negative when it said, I will own you forever? You know, maybe it is simply just an acknowledgement that you'll be changed forever, that you'll always sort of, you'll always owe something to that experience. But maybe something constructive or creative and positive can come out of, you know, witnessing each other's trauma. You know, maybe there is something positive to the fact that, Paul took that photograph, you know, as opposed to he just should not have taken that photograph, which yeah. Some people would say. So I think it's, you know, for me at least, it feels like a very hopeful structure for the book and for the play.
And the play, The Body of an American, you mentioned mm-hmm. that it debuted in Portland. It'll be in London this winter. Is the goal to bring that to New York?
Yeah, I mean, it always is in the sense that, you know, without New York productions, or to some degree London too, it's hard to get enough notice, you know, for a play to have a longer life. So in that sense, that's always the goal. And there are lots of, there's several theaters and producers right now that are talking about the potential of producing it in New York. So, you know, it's gotten a fair amount of attention already. I think we'll see how it does in London. I think that can help a lot too. And hopefully it will, you know, I'll be able to see it in New York before too long.
Yeah. Dan, it's been such a pleasure talking to you today, and this is a powerful collection, and I urge people to pick it up because, well, Watson happens to be Canadian, and I think you've done a great service in terms of bringing his experience in a unique and still powerful way to readers. So congratulations on this book.
And well, thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate the attention to the book and to Paul's story. So thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. And congratulations on being a dad.
Thank you. 3 weeks old.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. And mom's all right?
She's doing well. She's doing well, too. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
DanOBrien.org is the website. The book is called War Reporter. It's published in North America, I guess, by Hanging Loose Press, and then in Britain by CB Editions. Its author, the poet and playwright, Dan O'Brien, joined me on the line from Los Angeles. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plantin.